It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with Mark Holland, always like to tag along with Daniel, our life coach and counselor, and almost kind of a theological approach to counseling, and quite a well-read and well-thought-through gentleman. Good day, Mr. Pryor.
Good day to you, Mark.
Got you in studio. We're continuing our subject on the subject of sex, then and now. Last week, we kind of talked about some of the biological reasons why sex maybe is really ramped up before you get married or right at marriage, and then it kind of trails off afterwards. This week, we're talking more about the psychological aspects of why sex might wane a little bit. And you want to start off by kind of telling us the difference between the brain and the mind.
Right. And last week, as you said, Mark, we kind of went into the neurological aspects of that. And by the way, if people want to hear these again, they'll be posted on the Bible-Based Counselor website as part one, part two. So you'll be able to see this the series there in a row. It's an interesting and a very important topic, not an easy one to exhaust. There are just so many aspects of it, but it's very important because it's important to know, you know, what we should be pursuing in marriage and what marriage should be about. And sex is just such a huge part of it. In counseling, that's probably one of the big issues that people have. They come, disenchantment or whatever, you know, the picture kind of changes and comes as a surprise to people. So we're trying to clear it up a little bit here and maybe give some people some insights. But last week we talked about the biological aspect of it. Certainly didn't exhaust that.
We heard about oxytocin
and dopamine and how those things play in the narrative of what we think sex should mean to us. Today, we're kind of continuing that. We're going to talk about, there are a couple of other aspects. There's a sociological aspect and a psychological aspect. And we can sort of say, last week we talked about the brain, this week and from here on we'll talk about the mind. And let's start off, though, by articulating the problem, and the problem, this would be like the presenting problem, which people would come to the counselor and say, talk about. And it basically comes down to a disenchantment. The old song, "The Thrill Is Gone,"
right,
came to mind as you know. And why is that change? Well, let's begin to, you know, kind of jump in here. Obviously, one of the things turns out to be difference of perspective, and that's. The husband and the wife will come in, and, you know, you can imagine, if you haven't been a counselor, you can imagine this. If you're a counselor, you're familiar with this. They have a different perception of what the sex picture should look like right now. Mm. So there's a gender-based difference of perception, and that is not going to go away. Gals grow up differently. They experience life differently than men. They play a different role in life. They play a different role in sex. They cannot possibly have the same perception. When a guy and a gal say, "Yeah, do you like sex?" "Yeah, I like sex too." That when they use the word like or love or whatever, they don't mean the same thing. They can't possibly be meaning the same thing because they're coming from two different perceptions in life. And there's a gender-based difference in perception. There's also an experience-based difference in perception because we grow up differently, and children grow up, and well-meaning parents, of course, and raising children. The children get it's kind of like we say it's in the drinking water. By osmosis, the children are indoctrinated with a perception of what sex should be. This isn't parents having sex in front of the kids. It's just the way dad talks to mom and the way mom responds, and do they hug, do they not hug. How do they hug? Do they hold hands? How do they talk to one another and address one another? This gives the child, as they're growing up, a perception of what those two genders should be relating like. And then as they grow up, they have the boy and the girl. They have different experiences in peer experiences and those kinds of things that kind of mold their perception of what the sexual dance should look like. And then finally is a personality-based difference. We just... people just are wired a little bit different. Mm-hmm. That some of that has.
Well, let me ask, you keep talking about gender-based expectations. What is the kind of the general gender-based expectation of male, and what is the expectation of the female? Can you kind of go into that a little bit?
I can go into a bit, of course. So we have basically as our model, our basic model, basically the animal kingdom. Now, obviously, animal nature, when it transposes into human nature, it becomes much more complex. Animals don't have the soul that human has. The animals don't have the psychological capacity to build and contemplate these deeper, more meaningful relationships. But looking at that model, you've got the male or the role of the male, which is basically the driving force, the active participant, and then you've got the role of the female, which is the receptive or passive role of that. When those transpose into human nature, you have the male appetite, which we've associated with. There's a word, sadism. I don't want to frighten people here. I don't want to frighten people here, but the fact is that at the bottom of the male drive is a sadistic element. That is, if I'm using the term sadistic or sadist, I'm referring to being enamored, excited. Speaking of the male, when I'm referring to the sadistic tendency in the male, it's simply that aspect of being excited by controlling. And you can see how in the animal nature, we don't call it sadism, but on the in the male's role in the animal kingdom, the drive to perform and to control that the sexual encounter is critical. The counterpart to that is the masochist frame of mind, which is excitement by being controlled. And you can see, once again, if you look at the animal kingdom, there's a certain role that the female plays. When those transpose into human nature, there's a certain intention about them. And that's what can become dangerous, let's say. And in extreme cases, we have the idea of masochism and sadism, masochism.
So it sounds like you're saying at the very basic level, men want to dominate and women want to be dominated? I mean, that sounds kind of controversial.
I don't know if want would be the correct. They have a bent toward.
Okay.
Yeah, they have a bent toward.
In the lowest level animal kingdom sense.
Yeah, and that's a nature that we share. Mm-hmm. Of course, hopefully we're living also above that nature. We can control that. These variously based paradigms change after marriage in a pretty complex way. If you can imagine that you've got, say, X would be the male, Y would be the female, or X would be the one experience, Y another experience, or one personality, another personality. The change wouldn't be from X to Y. Those perceptions, it would be from X to X sub 1 or X sub 2, Y to Y sub 1. But so they stay the same and they become more complex.
More complex.
Yeah, so even
this
though,
is a good thing.
It is
this
a good
is a
thing.
Civilizing
it's,
thing.
It is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And it's a transition, what's actually going on. So these variously based paradigms change after marriage. They're different before and after marriage. It's a transition from individual being to shared being. Or not, which is kind of where the rub comes in, because if I don't make that transition from just an individual being to a shared being, psychologically, emotionally, then that's where the struggle comes in.
Mm-hmm. That's when people come in to see you, because they're having problems.
Yeah. You know, the sexual behavior is mainly a biologically driven, as we talked about last week, but we nevertheless associated with emotional and psychological intimacy. What we don't realize, however, is that in the in the early days, primarily, it's clearer this way, is the power and the influence of a psychological and emotional distance factor. The fact that we care more about numero uno than we do about the other person. And we don't realize the extent to which in pre-marriage we pursue romance largely to meet personal needs or to fulfill personal wants. You know, one quite often doesn't know that other person well enough to recognize his or her selfishness, that is my own selfishness. I don't recognize that other person or know that other person well enough to recognize my own selfishness in this, nor to have that other person's best interests at heart. It's generally true that discovery in the stage of romantic relationships, new discovery, is self-centered, self-serving. And the more fixated a person is on sex, the more important sex is to an individual, the more significant is the appearance, and apparent is that truth, that it's that we're self-centered or self-serving. And this is largely true because romantic relationships, like almost all behaviors, are have a huge survival component. The first and foremost, they have to be safe. Of course, safety is a relative concept. It might look different from different people's different perception, different ideologies. In first attraction, or what's typically called lust in the science and science of love, or the study of love, the people that look at these things biologically, psychologically, and emotionally refer to that first attraction as lust. So, you know, as Christians, we think of lust as being a sinful thing, but let's think of it in terms of just first attraction. The lack of anything other than superficial intimacy, that is that biologically driven reward, lowers a number of risk factors. And so risk of making wrong choice, risk of wrong commitment, risk of being responsible for the other person's happiness, risk of not living up to that other person's expectation, risk of personal desires not being fully met or long-term regret, risk of being enchanted. All these risk factors are lowered, and so that kind of renders the careless and fanciful sexual activities as psychologically and emotionally more safe. There's less risk in it.
As you can see, a lot of thought goes into this subject. Boy, I just thought the thrill was gone. But we're trying to kind of hash out what goes on in a marriage. Why do things kind of get more routine? Not necessarily a bad thing is what I think we kind of came to last week. You're going to flesh out more what you mean by this here in our next segment. Before we take the break, how can people get in touch with you if maybe they need some marital counseling, Daniel?
Yeah, the phone number is 425-778-6169. The website is BibleBasedCounselor.com, and of course these broadcasts are podcasted there. Yeah, they can contact me in one of those two ways. Yeah.
Bellevue and Edmonds locations for counseling with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. We'll be back with more of Sound Mind in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Where marriage is concerned, an ounce of prevention is worth a lot more than a pound of cure. Too many couples start off with misconceptions and then wait until the damage is done to seek counsel. As a marriage counselor, I help couples understand both the purpose and process of marriage, and I teach essential tools of communion. If you're married or thinking about marriage and want to get started right, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland as well, and talking this week kind of part two of sex then and now. Why does the thrill go out of married sexual life, and maybe how to bring it back, maybe how to get your perspective in line with maybe kind of what's real and what should be the reality as Christians. And Daniel, we were just before the break talking about the differences between genders and getting away from self, and we want to try and create something together as a married couple.
Yeah, we talked about the, you know, kind of the problem and how that it's gender-based, experience-based, personality-based, but also the fact that when we come into marriage, we're coming from a world that an identity that's individual being, and we're going into something that's shared being. And so we talked a little bit about that. And then some other factors are the thing about the new becomes old. And of course, this has a biological link to it. There. The neurological or biological reward in the brain reinforces the satisfaction of that early discovery phase. That actually wanes in the as the relationship matures, though. The part of what drives the adrenaline rush and then that following dopamine rush that we're talking about in the brain is the anticipation of unfamiliar, of new discovery, of surprise. You know, you kind of you know what I'm talking about in the experience of new romance or new sexual encounters. There's that, you know, unfamiliarity and surprise. And, of course, that changes as the sex and all the things that surround the sex become more routine mm-hmm. in a committed relationship. Romance has been defined as a pursuit of what we can't attain. And for that reason, it's long been taken for granted in certain quarters of society. I'm talking about books on the art, specifically the Art of Romance written back in the 12th century, I think.
And certainly
like
played out in the romance novels that women like to read.
Exactly. Romance could not be sustained in the marriage for any length of time. However, let's quickly add this, that the commitment to remain married and remain faithful in marriage after the newness is gone is a key that unlocks the door to better health, deeper, richer purpose in love, deeper understanding of the nature of God.
Which is what we're all after, I think, as we want to mature in our love life. We want to have a deeper experience of God through our marriage.
So obviously there's a choice that comes, and that choice is one of, they can either choose toward to move toward prioritizing that other person. So obviously there's a choice that comes in the interest of a deeper, more meaningful devotion to one another. The brain can be taught to enjoy a less exhilarating, say, less selfish sexual experience by prioritizing and developing other areas of the relationship. Caring, intentional caring, letting sex become just, you know, what it will as a result. But that requires the paradigm shift regarding the purpose of marriage, along with the development of a congruent, more realistic narrative. The narrative would be that story in my mind that tells me what sex is supposed to be about. We have a narrative. It's partly come from Hollywood. It's partly come from our parents. It's probably partly come from books that we've read and all these different things. But to challenge that narrative and reconstruct a narrative that has more to do with shared being and with
the reality of who you're married to. Mm-hmm. I mean, every person brings something unique into the marriage, and it isn't going to be like what they read about.
Yeah, right, exactly. So there's a process involved, obviously, and so all this change has to come with the commitment of marriage. So sooner or later, after we tie the knot, the discovery of the new and the exciting kind of morphs into stages of routine. And so we become familiar not only with the good of that other person, but also with the bad of that other person. You know, one life begins to overlap into another life. That's what I'm talking about when I refer to the shared being. And I've often heard, and you have too, I'm sure, people talking about, I've got to get away, I've got to get space. And I've heard that married couples in counseling even say, you know, I just feel like I need some space. The safe distance begins to narrow. That safe distance that we had before we were married, we weren't aware that we had a psychological and emotional distance, but just that the unfamiliarity kind of assured that we had that psychological distance. And that's narrowing now. And to use a Bible term, those protective fig leaves are getting knocked off in close proximity. And so that begins to happen. And so we find ways to recreate distance, and we find ways to recreate distance, ways of being apart. We find things to argue about. We find ways to be busy, making a relationship wholly about things that we do rather than what we're becoming, with one another. Hobbies, ministries, even children, things get busy. By necessity, with the details of building life, you know, houses, jobs, cars, further education. And so all this growing of complexity in the process competes both logically and neurologically with that relative simplicity of life and that singularity of mind that allowed sex in the earlier times to seem to be like all that the relationship really needed to be about. So here's what we're left with. At some point early on, the marriage couple in their journey together, let's call it, that's a good way to say it, they come to a fork in the road. And there's a choice, and it's a profoundly critical choice. It's going to have implications for their entire relationship, success or failure. It's going to have if they have children, it'll have implications for those children and generations to come. And the choice is this. They can either pursue, let's call it agape love, and call it true intimacy. They can either pursue that, and that's going to require mutual surrender, mutual sacrifice, service, selflessness, all those challenging concepts.
Virtues,
yes. Yeah. Or they can pursue what I want to call Eros love, and I'll talk about a little bit about that in just a second here. And I'm going to call that superficial intimacy, because it's pretty much just biologically driven, and it doesn't require any intention on my part. Take the relationship deeper, let that, you know, intentionally let that other person be meaningful to me, and those kinds of things. The superficial intimacy requires a constant distancing and devaluing. So they have to make that choice, because what we're going to find is that the two can't exist together. If you are familiar with C.S. Lewis's book, The Four Loves, mm-hmm. and I don't know if I've mentioned that in one of my shows before, but this is an area, I have all the respect in the world for C.S. Lewis. This is one area where I disagree with C.S. Lewis when he uses the term Eros. And knowing a little bit about his life from the different biographies that were written of C.S. Lewis, he was not an expert in this area of sexual love and that, and he was married
bachelor
for a short period of time.
Yeah,
and even there are indications that even in his understanding of sexual relationships, there was the biography that I've reading now has, I think the name of it is The Fellowship, and it's about the Inklings, and so there's quite a bit of there about C.S. Lewis and the other men too. But this person brings out, you know, a lot of the sexual appetites of these men that were part of this group, because they weren't men who were raised in Christian homes and raised in Christian virtues. A lot of them, you know, they started out as atheists. So you get a picture of C.S. Lewis as being a person that had a lot of this, kind of the sadomasochistic view of sex and pleasure and that. And his understanding of Eros is kind of paints it off to be a very noble thing. But Eros is really that basic animal instinct that we have, the drive towards sexual behavior. And it's not a virtuous love. It's a very selfish love. It was suggested, and C.S. Lewis took issue with this, but I agreed with it. It was suggested that Eros gets in the way of true love, or Eros gets in the way of agape, and agape gets in the way of love, or Eros. And I think that this is the choice that people have to make when they're getting married. It's not that we don't enjoy sex and that we're not supposed to, but it can't be the chief cornerstone of the relationship. And if we make it that way, what suffers is our ability to really genuinely care at other levels, because those things are at cross purposes. And in fact, that's what we're going to talk about in the next show. I'm going to take us down this road, what I call the slippery slope of sexual satisfaction. I'm going to kind of talk about how, sex is a good thing, an enjoyable thing, wonderful thing, but it can also be a very dangerous thing, and it can undermine and cause distance in the relationship.
Well, when it becomes everything, and it certainly is what our whole society focuses on, sexual fulfillment at all costs, it's destructive.
Exactly.
And destructive both for individuals and for married couples.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So great stuff this week as we continue this subject of sex then and now and how to have better marriages. If people need to get some help in this area in their relationship as a married couple, how would they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Phone number is 425-778-6169. They can email through the website, which is BibleBasedCounselor.com. And, of course, there are articles written at the other ChristianCounselorsForum.com. And to remind them also, Mark, that these shows that we do here are podcasted at BibleBasedCounselor.com as well.
And you have locations in Edmonds and Bellevue.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So always great advice, life coaching and counseling with Daniel Pryor. This has been Sound Mind on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor with an encouraging word for struggling marriages. You know, it's never too late to do the right thing if a husband and wife will fully commit to one another and apply a few biblically based fundamentals of intimate relationship. As a marriage counselor, I teach these fundamentals and their use. To learn more about how these might help your marriage, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.